You're listening to TalkZone.com. Internet Talk Radio.
TalkZone.com.
Welcome to How to Tour Italy with your host, Anthony Capozzoli. Anthony's passion for Italy is contagious. His dream is to bring Italy to life for people everywhere and to help them embrace the wonderful Italian lifestyle at home. Now, with How to Tour Italy, let's welcome travel expert, guidebook author, photographer, and radio host, Anthony Capozzoli.
Welcome to the How to Tour Italy show. I'm your host, Anthony Capozzoli, and today we have a great show planned for you. We'll be talking about the wonderful artist that made Rome a truly Baroque city, Mr. John Lorenzo Bernini. We have a couple of guests, Miss Karen McKinnon of Venere.com. We'll be talking about great tips and how to find the best hotels throughout Italy as well. And then we're going to dive into a wonderful Italian staple, pasta fagioli, with another guest, Laura Viscuso. She is a restaurant owner in Rome. The name of the restaurant is Mama's Ristorante, and we'll be talking about what makes pasta fagioli great and some tips on how to make it at home yourself. So what I'd like to do now is dive into the art and itinerary segment, and we'll be talking about, as I mentioned, your friend and mine, John Lorenzo Bernini. He's truly, in my opinion, one of Italy's most loved and ambitious artists, not just for the Baroque, but the entire Italian history. I mean, he has truly painted Rome a Baroque city and gave it its character that it has today. Many of the fountains that you see there, many of the buildings, St. Peter's itself, the colonnade in Piazza San Pietro, which is St. Peter's, lots of unbelievable statues have been decorated, created, and are filled with Bernini's touch throughout most of the museums in Rome. So what a couple of things about him that I want to get into. I think today, last week we talked about Caravaggio, and I got some good feedback on people were interested in some of the kind of the historical insights on them as a person and some of the things that made them human, if you will, besides just their art. So what we'll do is talk a bit about some of the artwork that they've created, in this case Mr. Bernini, and a little bit about his history and some of the things that made him crazy like all geniuses are. First of all, he famously did not get along with another architect at the time. His name was Borromini, and we'll talk a little bit about how he has, for posterity's sake, showed what he thinks of some of the architecture of Mr. Borromini. You can see that in Piazza Navona in Rome. And like all geniuses, he had quite a temper. He actually tried to kill his brother over a woman, and even worse, he had his servant go slice the woman's face with a razor, which I think is a bit interesting. We'll get into a little bit about that. And because he is a great artist and he's got such a good handle on the hammer and chisel, he not only made a bust of the woman whose face he had cut, he turned her into Medusa. So we'll talk a little bit about how that works. So I think I'll start off today talking about a handful of my famous sculptures created by Mr. Bernini. First and foremost, excuse me, everybody, I've got a bit of a cold, so if I step back for just a second and swallow, forgive me, I apologize. Chicago winters, you know, they catch up to you. One of my favorite paintings, or rather sculptures by Bernini, is Aeneas Anchises in Ascanius. You can see this at the Borghese Gallery in Rome, and it's a wonderful depiction about Aeneas in the founding of Rome. It's based on Aeneas fleeing to Rome from Troy with his father, Anchises, his son Ascanius, the eternal flame that was kept eternally burning throughout the Roman Empire and the gods of Troy. It's interesting because in the movie Troy, if you're a movie buff, you can actually see that beginning to take place. And the very next scene, which they don't show in the movie, is Aeneas fleeing Troy. But at the very end of the movie, Paris hands his sword off to a person inside the walls of Troy. That is actually Aeneas, who he's giving that sword to. Aeneas goes on to, you know, not only obviously flee Troy, but he goes through all of these, his own odyssey of his own lands in Italy and founds Rome. And Virgil wrote a book called The Aeneid about the founding of Rome, and it was written by direction of Augustus, who was Julius Caesar's nephew and took over after the great Caesar. One thing I want to point out about the movie Troy, which I never understand why Hollywood does this, but they actually changed the plot of the Iliad, which seems insane to me. I mean, it's one of, in my opinion, one of the finest books ever written, but needless to say, Hollywood disagrees. They had to have it changed. Menelaus is not actually killed by Hector, and they illustrate that in the movie. That does not happen. Why they have to do that, it's annoying, but it's something I wanted to point out. So if you ever see the movie when Menelaus gets stabbed by Hector when he's fighting one-on-one against Paris, that does not happen. So it's just something that Hollywood made up. So shame on you, Hollywood. I don't know why you have to mess with stuff like that. So anyway, going on, you can actually see the Anchises Aeneas Anchises and Ascanius statue is wonderful. Like I said, you can see it in the Borghese gallery on the main floor, and many of the sculptures from Bernini are housed there because the Borghese family were big patrons of his and bought much of his work either directly from him or from other people when they wanted to sell it. So it's a lot of his collection can be seen there. Another one that's at the Borghese is the Pluto and Proserpina, or the Hades and Persephone, depending if you're a Greek or a Roman mythology buff. This is a fantastic sculpture, and what I mean by that is it is voluptuous in that you can actually see the hands of Pluto pressing into the flesh of Proserpina. It looks so real that it's almost scary. You can't almost believe that somebody can do this with stone. Truly the touch of a master. It goes beyond that. I mean, Proserpina, who is fighting Pluto because she doesn't want to be taken down to Hades, and we'll get into the story and mythology in a minute, but she's pushing on his face, on his eye, and you can actually see the skin on his face. Keep in mind, this is marble being pressed up and wrinkled by her force. So many of the, I guess, the human touches are present in much of Bernini's works, and he does create things not only beautifully, but he manages to catch whoever he is sculpting, whatever image he's sculpting, whether it be the gods or individuals. He catches them perfectly at their moment of transformation, when they're being turned in from, I guess, normal everyday people into gods, demigods, or mythological depictions. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go through. But the story about Pluto and Proserpina is pretty straightforward, and many people know it, but Pluto kidnapped Proserpina while she was picking flowers in Enna, Sicily, and brought her down to Hades so that she would be his queen and the ruler, the female ruler of the underworld. Well, her mother Demeter did not like that very much and pleaded to Zeus, who was Hades' brother, and asked if she could have her daughter back from Hades. So what happened is Zeus did agree, but there was a little bit of a punishment because Proserpina actually ate 3 pomegranate seeds, and as a result was forced to stay 1/3 of the year in Hades. So that equals winter. So apparently we're stuck in the throes of what pomegranate seeds will yield today. And let me tell you, it's been a brutal winter here in Chicago. I've got to tell you, I've got a nasty cold as a result. I mentioned that Bernini sculpts to capture the moment of transformation. So we see that in the Pluto and Proserpina, we capture it just as Persephone is becoming the queen of Hades. We also see what Aeneas is fleeing Troy to become the legendary founder of Rome. He goes on in another sculpture, which is probably one of his better known, the Apollo and Daphne. And the story, let me tell you a little bit about who Apollo and Daphne are first, and I'll describe how Bernini was able to create this masterfully. Apollo, the god, had a pretty difficult time finding love, even being a god, so he literally had to chase it down and promise things to women in return for their favor in love. So starting with Cassandra, Cassandra of Troy, actually, she was wooed by Apollo, and she agreed to be his lover under one condition, that Apollo grant her the power to be a prophetess, to be able to see the future. She consented, so Apollo gave her the power of prophecy, but at the last second she declined and decided, you know what, I don't really feel like being your lover. So Apollo said fine. So what he did is he made her a prophetess, but also declined or added the condition that no one would ever believe any of her prophecies. So anything she spoke would be perfectly true, but no one would believe it. This holds true for Troy because she did foresee the fall of Troy, the Trojan horse, and beware of the Greeks, if you will. And no one ever believed a word she said. So that was her punishment for declining Apollo. Getting back to Apollo and Daphne, Apollo, same condition, except he didn't bargain with her this time. He figured he would just chase her, much like Pluto did Proserpina. And he tried to catch her. But Daphne was running and did not want to be raped, if you will, by Apollo and taken into her arms, into his arms. So as Apollo was nearing her, or being almost catching her, she prayed to her father Peleus, a river god, to save her. So he did, and just as Apollo was just getting his hands on Daphne, she was turned into a laurel tree. And Bernini depicts this scene magically. You can actually see her fingertips turning into leaves, her toes turning into the roots of the tree, and the transformation is perfectly caught. Even Apollo's face is shocked that this woman that he's chasing, this desirable Daphne, is now turned into a laurel tree. So it's a perfect moment of being caught during the transformation. And it's interesting because Rome, during the Baroque era, was counter-reformation and transforming itself, the church itself, into something that I guess, caused the Reformation. So Bernini is the perfect artist to illustrate this and kind of redecorate the city, transform it into the Baroque, just as he did his individual sculptures. I think Bernini was actually quoted that he thought that the Apollo and Daphne was one of his best sculptures, and he would often be seen admiring it, specifically Daphne's hair, because that is also turning into the leaves along with her fingertips, and he was very pleased with that. It's very delicate marble work, and if you see it in the Borghese, I think you'll agree. There are some good books if you are interested in taking a look at some of the artworks from Bernini. It's simply titled Bernini by Rudolf Witkauer. It's a wonderful book filled with illustrations. Almost all of the artwork and architecture created by Bernini is there, with great stories about the wonderful artist. In fact, if you'd like to look at the pictures as I talk, simply go to unabellavista.com/radioshow, and at the bottom of the page I've got photos of all of the artwork I'm talking about today. Another one of Bernini's wonderful works, he created the Statue of David. Now, there are many, many statues of David, but this one's a bit different. I mean, everyone knows famously Michelangelo's David in Florence, Verrocchio's, and some other ones. But I think his is interesting because he is actually depicting David in the middle of the fight, where Michelangelo depicts David at rather before the fight. He's actually eyeing down Goliath. And the other artists kind of usually depict David after the fight, holding a sword with their foot on Goliath's head. In this case, for Bernini, he is illustrating David right in the middle of him torquing his body with the sling and the rock to actually slay Goliath. It's interesting, though, if you look at the sculpture carefully, Bernini made a mistake. He's got the sling going the wrong way based on the torque of the body. So if David, in the case of Bernini's sculpture, were to try to release the stone, it would fall dead because it would have no momentum to be slung. So that was a one minor mistake, and most people never even notice it. I think because people are in awe from, I guess, the beauty of the image. You can actually see David's feet and his toes building up the pressure to release the stone. And once again, this is David being transformed into the great David who slayed Goliath, you know, little dog in a big fight kind of thing. And he has always, in my opinion, and this is probably one of his best illustrations along with the Apollo and Daphne, of being caught in the middle of a transformation. Another interesting fact about the David is it's actually a self-portrait of John Lorenzo Bernini struggling with the stone as he sculpted. He had Cardinal Maffeo Barberini holding a mirror as he sculpted so he can see himself struggling with the stone to create it as the face of David. The interesting thing about the mirror holder is that Cardinal Barberini ultimately became Pope Urban VIII. So that's quite a powerful statement, considering that most of the money and patronage came from the church, cardinals, and popes. The fact that he had a future pope holding his mirror while he sculpted is saying something relatively important about the power and ambition of Bernini. Another one of his sculptures, St. Longinus and St. Peter's. St. Peter's is absolutely filled to the rim with wonderful architecture, sculpture, artwork. I mean, Michelangelo's present there, not only in the dome, but his more famous Pietà. Well, Bernini has got a number of sculptures there. I'm going to focus on one, St. Longinus. And St. Longinus is the the saint in this case, who said, "This truly is the Son of God." When Jesus was on the cross after he had died, St. Longinus is the gentleman who poked Jesus in the side with his spear to see if he was dead. So the marks that you see on Jesus' side in his rib, where you see the spear mark, that is delivered by St. Longinus. Well, the image that Bernini captures is St. Longinus immediately after he has poked Jesus in the side. He has thrown down his armor. His arms are out. He's looking upward towards heaven, holding his spear. And you can almost hear him muttering the words, "This truly is the Son of God," as he's looking up into heaven. On the website, unabellavista.com/radioshow, I think this is one of my favorite pictures of that particular sculpture. It's taken from underneath, looking up, so you really get kind of the power of the particular image. It's an enormous sculpture. So this initial photo that I've delivered, I think, does a very, very good job of showing the power and the mystique of Bernini's ability to capture images and moments in time as people are being transformed. But more importantly, the photographer who took this photo did a wonderful job of showing, I guess, the depth and emotional reach of the particular image. If you want to, you can simply Google Bernini, and Longinus. And Longinus is spelled L-O-N-G-I-N-U-S for other images if you want to see different perspectives and different photographs of it. But the one I have on the website is pretty good. Staying in St. Peter's, Bernini was the reason that we have the Baldacchino. Baldacchino in Italian means canopy. And he built this canopy over the tomb of St. Peter inside the church. And it's like 6 stories tall, but it's actually dwarfed inside the church. I mean, it's hard to believe that something 6 stories could be dwarfed. What Bernini did is he took all of the bronze from the Pantheon, the facade of the Pantheon, melted it down and turned it into this wonderful, glorious baldacchino. And it's something to behold. I've got images out of it on the website as well. But one thing that when you do go to St. Peter's, you have to be sure to look for the baldacchino. You walk right in, you'll see it. It's decorated with the bees of the Barberini family. It's fantastic. So what I want to do now is kind of get into a little bit about the history or kind of depravity, if you will, in the one moment of Bernini's life where I think he lost his mind. He was dating a woman, Costanzo Bonarelli. He did a bust of her. She was the wife of one of his assistants, and he was having a very long-time affair with this woman, Costanza. So, I mean, he loved her completely. For him to take time to ultimately sculpt a bust of someone who wasn't rich, powerful, or famous. I mean, Costanza was a beautiful woman, but she was not a patron of the arts and certainly didn't pay him for the work. Well, he created a bust of her. You can see it in Florence in the Uffizi. And then it happened like it happens to, most of us. We get scorned by love. In the case, he kind of had a suspicion that something funny was going on, so he said that he was going to be leaving to go to the country. What he did is he got in the carriage and looked like he was leaving out of town, but actually went and waited by Costanza's house. And sure enough, walking out the door in the later afternoon was his brother Luigi, in the arms of Costanza, who looked all kind of messed up. Her hair was a mess, so it was obvious what they were doing in the house. Well, Bernini actually freaked out, chased his brother into kind of a home near St. Peter's where he was working, and beat him with a crowbar for quite some time and almost killed his brother. I mean, it literally, I think he kind of came to his senses realizing that he's going to kill this gentleman who happens to be his brother over a woman who was having an affair on someone else having an affair. I mean, think about it. The woman was married, having an affair on Bernini with his brother. So it's almost something that Shakespeare would write or something you'd see on daytime television when they get some weirdos on TV talking about whose baby is it anyway. But it goes a little bit further. I mean, Bernini then orders his assistant to go to Costanza's house, go into her room, and literally cut her face with a razor blade, which he did. So this goes a little bit further than just a bit of jealous rage. He actually then, the next day, chased his brother down with a sword and almost killed him again. And his mother kind of came to the rescue. Luigi escaped into the church, Santa Maria Maggiore. And was saved because he actually entered the church. I mean, even Bernini, in a full rage, was respectful of the church and understood what that meant. I mean, you can't go around killing people even in 17th century Rome. And then the last touch, I guess, for Bernini to add this from an artistic perspective, he actually took Costanza, created another bust, but he put her in the likeness of Medusa. And Medusa was the immortal Gorgon who would turn anyone who looked at her into stone. And we'll get into the history and mythology of that a little bit later, but you can actually see that at the Capitoline Museum in Rome, and it's an absolutely wonderful sculpture. It's very lifelike, and you can actually see the snakes writhing, but that is actually Costanza's face that is now created in eternity as Medusa, thanks to her cheating on Bernini, who was obviously, you know, having an affair with her over against her husband. So, and last but not least, before I wrap up here in the next minute, Bernini went up to Paris by request of Louis XIV, and he was asked to add architectural additions to the Louvre, and at the same time was creating a bust of Louis XIV. Well, Louis XIV, while sitting for the sculpture, I guess his hair was laying down on his forehead. Well, Bernini just walked up, moved the hair out of the way, and keep in mind, this is the French king, Louis XIV. No one certainly didn't touch him or adjust his hair without his request. Well, anyway, Bernini did it and said that such a great king should let the world see his forehead. It then became kind of a hairstyle of the day, kind of all the rage, and it became known as the Bernini adaptation. So hopefully those are a couple interesting facts about John Lorenzo Bernini, and we are now going to take a little break. We'll be back with Karen McKinnon of Venere.com after this.